KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music, if it is geek. It's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
Right, welcome to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. I am Joan. With me is
Caleb
and
Jason.
That's right, we're back again every Thursday. So, how you gents doing?
Doing quite well. It's a lovely day outside. It's been a good week.
It is. Sticking with that kind of warm August weather.
It's part of that classic California Bay Area trend.
Yeah.
It's quite Augustine.
I
think that's how it's said.
I'm sure it works.
Yeah. And if it isn't the right way, let us know.
Yeah. You can find out. You can get in contact with us on Facebook, facebook.com/robotsattackshow, or you can do a search for Robots Attack, two words. That'll find us also. And then on Twitter, we are Robots Attack Me. It's all one word, lowercase, all the way across. And our email address is robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And if you just want one place to find everything that is related to what we do, that is robotsattack.me. That has our past episodes as well as links to all the things I've mentioned as well.
That's right. And if you're unfamiliar with the show, we are a geek-centric talk show. We talk about entertainment, tech, comic books, movies, video games, all that stuff. And what we like to do to start off the show is talk about some new releases, maybe give you some ideas to check out this week and the coming weekend. So if you're in the mood for the theater, perhaps you want to see, now don't let this confuse you.
I'm already confused.
Well, then you're going to be in real trouble.
Okay.
So actually pay real close attention to what I'm about to say.
Concentrating.
The November Man. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is August. It is not November. Don't let the title confuse you if you're standing in front of the multiplex and you see the November Man title.
Just seems poorly timed.
Exactly. So it's basically Pierce Brosnan. He's a.k.a. the November Man. So there you go. He is apparently an extremely dangerous and highly trained ex-CIA agent. That's who Pierce Brosnan would be, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's lured out of retirement for one last mission. He's got to protect this woman named Alice, a vulnerable witness who could expose a decades-long conspiracy. This assignment makes him a target of his former friend and CIA protege, David Mason. Oh, boy.
I thought you were going to say David Cross for some reason.
No, David Mason.
Okay.
With growing suspicions of a mold agency, there's no one that Pierce Brosnan, a.k.a. the November Man, can trust. If you're not interested in seeing movies about November or people named November Man or CIA people and all that stuff, maybe you want to see a movie called Start Up. It's 19-year-old Eric. He's prematurely transferred to his same adult prison facility as his estranged father. What could go wrong?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As his explosive temper
that
quickly...
That hasn't already.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. What else could also go wrong? Yeah. As his explosive temper quickly finds him enemies in both the prison authorities and fellow inmates, and his already volatile relationship with his father is pushed past the breaking point, Eric is approached by a volunteer psychotherapist who runs an anger management group for prisoners.
Who is also his father. Maybe.
No.
Not at all.
Let's say you're not interested in prison stuff, you're not interested in CIA people, but you're interested in watching teens and found film footage movies, and well, maybe they're not teens, but they're people that are probably going to die horrible deaths. As above, so below. Miles of twisting catacombs lie beneath the streets of Paris, the eternal home to countless souls. When a team of explorers ventures into the uncharted maze of bones, they uncover the dark secret that lies within this city of the dead. They find the sequel to Brotherhood of the Wolf. Next, we have Life of Crime, the wife, played by Jennifer Aniston, is a corrupt real estate developer, or of a corrupt real estate developer, who is Tim Robbins, is kidnapped by two common criminals who intend to extort him with inside information about his crooked business and offshore accounts. That sounds any interest to you? There you go.
That's more interesting when I thought Aniston was going to be corrupt or something.
Well, it is full of double crosses and plot twists because it comes from the mind of Elmore Leonard.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So there you go. Maybe Justified Guy will show up in the background
right.
with his hat or something. And then we have a very strange sounding film that could be good or could just be strange. It's called The Congress. Just stick with me here.
Okay.
More than two decades after catapulting to stardom with The Princess Bride, an aging actress, Robin Wright, playing a version of herself, decides to take her final job, preserving her digital likeness for a future Hollywood through a deal brokered by her loyal longtime agent, played by Harvey Keitel, and the head of Miramount Studios. Her alias will be controlled by the studio and will star in any film they want with no restrictions. In return, she receives healthy compensation so she can care for her ailing son, and her digitized character will stay young forever. 20 years later, under the creative vision of the studio's head animator, played by John Hamm, the dude from Mad Men, Wright's digital double rises to immortal stardom. With her contract expiring, she is invited to take part in the Congress convention as she makes her comeback straight into the world of future fantasy cinema. Like I said, strange.
Yeah.
But it is something that you were starting to notice in commercials and things, like seeing digitized versions of actresses and actors. So
yeah,
I kind of see something like this not being too far-fetched, like actors and actresses actually sort of doing stuff like this to make sure their digitized versions of themselves maybe don't show up in like toilet paper commercials or something, or do.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to find out where that goes.
Would it? Are you really that interested, or are you just mocking me?
I'm fairly interested in where that's going to end up. But that's the big screen. Perhaps you prefer the screen you have in your home. Then you might want to check out Aftermath on Blu-ray and DVD. They really blew it up this time. Now a group of strangers is trapped in a small cellar with nuclear fallout raining down around them. Their supplies are dwindling, and outside is full of poison and the unknown. Do they stay and face death together in relative safety, or do they venture out and try to make the best of it? Did I mention that there's legions of zombie-like survivors outside?
What?
That happens.
Yep. Yeah.
That changes things.
It does. Then there's Almost Human, the complete series on DVD.
British or American?
The American. Okay. The one with
the people.
And I'm the law.
Yeah, it's.
Damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor.
Yeah, it's the underrated
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban, yes. Detective Kinnex is back on his feet. Well, mostly. He has physically recovered from the tragedy that took his partner and nearly him, but things have changed while he was away, and now he must work with a synthetic partner. He ends up with Dorian, a synthetic soul android, who finds a way to befriend Kinnex and get past his hard shell. Then there's Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return, on Blu-ray and DVD. This story continues the tale of the lost Kansas girl and her stalwart friends as they work to set the land of Oz back to rights. And it features a rather brilliant cast, featuring with Kelsey Grammer, Patrick Stewart, Benedict Peters, and Martin Short, just to name a few.
Dang.
Yeah. Then there is The Raven on DVD. This is actually from the Universal Vaults, and it's a chilling classic featuring Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff. The famous poem by Poe is more of an inspiration than a source for this story, as it is about a mad doctor who intentionally disfigures a man as an experiment. This mad doc also has a hobby of recreating instruments of torture from some of Poe's tales. This time over, the mad doc may have found his match in the man that he disfigured. So there you are. There's a few of the
sounds like a good family film there.
Yes.
Maybe though. Like, you can take your family to a concert, you
perhaps.
Know?
Perhaps.
And if you want free tickets to a concert, KSEU has got you covered. Just listen in and you could win. To see which shows we're giving away tickets for, go to KSEU.org and click on promotions. We don't have any, so
yeah.
If you click on us, you'll see that we're not giving any away. But
other shows are.
Other shows are.
And they're very good shows, so you ought to listen to them anyways.
It's true.
Other than our happiness and our sharing our voices with the world, we are giving that away.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're giving away the awesome that is our show.
That is free.
That is free to you as a service to you, our listeners.
Yes. Things that are not being given away but have been released as of, well, in this one of Tuesday, Madden NFL 15. If I need to explain Madden to you, I don't know.
That's soccer, right?
It is a football. Manner of football, but a different manner, an American manner. But yeah, everything that I've heard so far, it sounds like they've tried to tweak a lot of the small stuff to make things a little bit more interesting again. But they're going to come out with another one next year. So I don't know if it's going to be completely groundbreaking or anything. It is going to be pretty because it is very next gen.
They do make very pretty games.
Anyway, speaking of making things more pretty, the Metro series gets sort of a reincarnation in the Redux versions. You can pick up both the 2033 and the Last Light versions of Metro. They're both coming to the current gen, quote unquote, air quotes. Some manner
the one
of
in the four, in the PS4.
Yes, the one in the four, the 14 between them.
Yes,
and the PC
or the five if you just add them straight up.
But. Right, that could get confusing.
It's already confusing.
Anyway, also very pretty, fairly solid reviews because both games were fairly solid to begin with. Past that, we have. Let's see. Infamous gets an expansion as of yesterday. I've been hearing pretty mixed reviews of this one. And some people are fanatically like happy with anything that has anything to do with the game, and I think they've been very happy. But other people are complaining that it's even more short on plot compared to the game that was already having plot problems. So, past that, this is probably the most interesting one to me, even though I do not own the system that I can ever touch this with. For the 3DS, Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney.
I saw a trailer for this during the E3 coverage. I was like, what is this?
Yeah, I don't know how you play this at all, but I'm interested, and I'm going to hunt it down to try and mess around with it a little bit.
Looks like fun. Objection!
Right. Past that, also for the 3DS, is Azure Striker Gunvolt. That's
a very descriptive name.
Right, yeah. Both of the 3DS games are coming out on Friday. I'm not sure if that's the normal release date for 3DS games, but
I think games typically come out late in the week for some reason.
Anyway, Azure Striker, its main claim to fame is that it is created by the people who created the Mega Man Zero team game. So it seems to be a little bit of a cross between that and kind of Castlevania roots. So
that sounds interesting.
Yeah. Looks interesting.
Very cool. So from the land video games, we jump over to the land of comics. It's a bit of a hop more than an actual jump. Over at DC, there's Superman number 34. Superman must face a new enemy in The Machinist. But the shadows hide more than just the origins of this new villain. The disaster at the Ulysses Research Lab drives Clark into an investigation that will uncover a dark part of his past. Changing it up a little bit over at Marvel, it's Savage Hulk number 3. There's a new green powerhouse a new green powerhouse has stepped onto the scene. But who the heck is she? Meanwhile, Charles Xavier is pushed to extremes in his effort to save Bruce Banner. Then over at Dark Horse, it's Tomb Raider number 7. Lara's latest adventure brings her to an amusement park that seems low on the amusement scale. And a mysterious woman with ties to the events at Yamatai have put Lara in the crosshairs again. Over from Image,
Something. Okay. I was trying to figure out how to make that work. It doesn't really...
It was a good effort, though.
Yes. I'm all about the effort.
Then from Image, it's Saga number 22. If you need more than that, you probably haven't been reading Saga. Then there's from IDW, it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, number 3 of 4. The brothers land in the midst of a pitched sea battle, and an old adversary rises again, but fear not. Fearless intrepid Captain Michelangelo is here to save the day?
Okay.
There you go. And from our friends over at Welcome Comics, they also recommend Saga, as well as Revival, Mind Management, and Regular Show, new issues of which all dropped this week.
Nice.
I'm a fan of Regular Shows in animation form, but I need to check it out in actual comic form.
I hear the comics are actually also quite good.
Okay.
Okay, so now we've got some music. So we've got a new album from The Bug called Angels and Devils. It's the third full-length release from Kevin Martin as The Bug. Features guest appearances from Copeland, Death Grips, Flodan, Ganja Sufi, Liz Harris, Manga, Miss Red, and Warrior Queen. I don't know any of those people. Then we have a new album from Ty Siegel, Manipulator. The 17-track release from the California Garage Rocker was produced by Chris Woodhouse. We have a new album from the new Pornographers, Brill Bruisers, the first release in 4 years for the supergroup. That includes, Dan Bezier, Catherine Calder, Nico Case, I know that person, and AC Newman. Was produced by Newman and John Collins. I don't know her personally, but I know of her.
Mm.
Okay, then we have a new album from Brad Paisley. Moonshine in the Trunk, the 10th studio release for the country singer, features guest appearances from, all these albums, guests, ahoy. Emmylou Harris and Carrie Underwood. And then we have, finally, a new album from Basement Jacks, Junto. The 7th studio release for the British electro duo includes vocals from ETML, Kai Blanco, Sam Brooks, Nira, Nina Miranda, Patricia Panther, and Shaka. So there you go. Nice little plethora of new releases. Hopefully something on there piqued your interest. If not, Google, Bing, Yahoo, some other new releases.
Yeah.
Anywho, that's going to do it for the new releases. We're going to take a music break. We got a great show for you tonight. So you definitely want to stick around. We've got the core. We've got some geek talk. And, of course, we got the news. Shall we tease the folks some news?
Sure. I'm going to switch over to that tab. Here's a bit of news. We actually find out who Hello Kitty really is.
Who killed Hello Kitty?
Who Hello Kitty really is.
Oh, okay. I'm like, who really killed Hello Kitty? Oh, wait, she died? Or it died? Or... Yeah, okay, nice, okay.
Yeah. And the latest efforts to make children cybernetic.
Further cybernetic?
I suppose.
Perhaps, I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know that many cybernetic children. How many? Man, I need to meet the kids that you come across.
Maybe, just maybe, Hello Kitty. The real Hello Kitty is behind it all. Mm. You'll just have to wait and see. All
Indeed.
Right. Let's get to that music and play some Fits in the Tantrums, track Fool's Gold from the album More Than Just a Dream. We'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KACU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
All right, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. Before we get to the news, I got a little PSA for y'all. All right, San Jose Animal Advocates, are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. All right, I think it's time for some...
news.
That's right.
The news. Well, I'm going to start off with the one that I mentioned before, and we have official word about who and what exactly Hello Kitty is.
What makes this official?
Because it came from Sanrio.
Okay.
The corporation that has been producing the fantastically cute paraphernalia based on this character. And Hello Kitty is not a cat. Hello Kitty
what
is a little girl.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go with a state of mind.
It's a being, man.
You could kind of go existential like that if you want. Yeah. The official quote is, Hello Kitty is not a cat. She is a cartoon character. She's a little girl. She is a friend. She is not a cat. She is never depicted on all fours. She walks and sits two-legged, like a two-legged creature.
That's
she does
true.
Have her own pet cat, which is called Charmy Kitty. So that's the basis, but it is sort of like, it is kind of like, take one back, just be like, wait, what? She isn't actually a cat? But
she isn't of the feline persuasion.
Apparently not completely, or...
It would be weird for her to own a cat.
And also be a cat.
Well,
yeah.
I don't... Oh, okay. Goofy didn't own Pluto, but is Disney going to come out and be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. All right. In the recent news of Hello Kitty not being a cat, Goofy is not a dog.
I think it's possible. I mean, I wouldn't like him any more or less because of that. It's about the same as Hello Kitty being
I just think the reasons they gave, like, doesn't, just because you're on two legs and not on four. But.
Yeah, it's not necessarily earth-shattering, but it's just one of those, like, funny little things that came across, like, what the heck is this? But apparently after 40 years of being Hello Kitty is not... strictly is not a cat herself. She is Hello Kitty.
The creator.
I'm just imagining the creator being like so frustrated. Like, everybody keeps calling her a cat. Why do they keep doing this? I need to set this straight now.
I can't
get me Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, it was the reason that this became an issue is the LA Times was writing an article about a retrospective about the Hello Kitty paraphernalia that was going to be opening at the Japanese American National Museum down there. Okay. And one of the curators, Christine Arellano, who is an anthropologist at the University of Hawaii, wanted to kind of just, you know, make sure that they weren't going to misrepresent any aspect of this cherished character.
Okay.
And so, like, you know, they just shot them an email saying...
So she did some digging.
She did some digging, and she sent them a script for part of the show, and the correction they made was that Hello Kitty isn't a cat. And that's the only correction they made to her script. So it's like, interesting fact. And apparently also people, like, kind of, like, wigged out a little bit on Twitter, which they tend to do, but... Yeah.
Well, I just wonder if this is one of those, like, lost in translation things. I mean, did people on the other side of the ocean know this, like, long before us? And so we're just out of the loop, and everybody over there is looking at us like, yeah, of course. She stands up, she has a cat.
It's entirely possible, because, like, she's always been somewhat anthropomorphized as a character, so it's... But then again... There have been other characters that have been anthropomorphized cats that still identify as cats. So, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll see. We'll see how much this affects the Hello Kitty brand.
Mm-hmm. If that, yeah.
Are people now outraged? We'll what? It's not a cat!
I'm not
take
buying...
Take their stuff and just throw it in the trash.
I will not any longer purchase their stationery.
Or even on the flip side, too, those that were like, for all these years, I thought it was a cat. Now that I know it's not,
right.
Now I'll buy it.
That's true. So, they might have opened up new markets.
Mm-hmm.
for,
I mean,
random people who
there's
don't
a lot
like
of
cats.
Little girls out there, and now they have someone to identify with.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where or if this affects anything. But
and you heard it here first on Robots Attack. Well,
right,
first-ish.
Maybe if this is the first time you've heard it, then yes, you heard right. it here first.
If you haven't
so technically,
heard it,
that statement is correct.
Before now, you heard it first. Here.
You heard it here first. If this was the first time you heard it, see,
right?
Okay, yes. So I'll say that part. So you heard it here first. If this is the first time, you're
right.
hearing
excellent.
See, right. then I'm well, not, I can't be sued because I'm technically right.
Right. Whisper
We're
disclaimer.
Technically right. There mm-hmm. we go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of other firsts.
Yes.
Woo. Maybe I overstated earlier when I was talking about children becoming cybernetic. I still kind of think it works, but my fellow co-host was angered by this. And so.
Enraged.
So
running down.
Me. Right. He
running
turned
the
large
studio.
And green. And he has since shrunk down to normal, at least for his size proportions. Doctors in Beijing have successfully, for the first time, replaced a vertebra with a 3D printed custom implant vertebra.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's kind of neat to begin with, but yeah. it doesn't yeah. stop there.
No.
Oh, it gets, there's more?
It was 3D printed out of titanium.
That's definitely not going to be sold at the store.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's probably going to last a little while, too.
I think so.
So, okay, here's the thing that I was concerned about, maybe. And I don't know how this works. I mean, I thought at 12, you're still growing, aren't you? Are they going to have to swap them out every once in a while? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I am not sure what the growth for the spine is. I
right.
know
how fast does titanium grow? Does it grow as fast as the spine does?
I'm not sure.
Maybe they put some stuff on it, some kind of liquid jelly molding T-1000 stuff, so it'll like mold with. As
I okay, I like that. I like that.
It's
part of sort of a larger story in that they're building a lot more human body parts out of 3D printed materials.
Mm-hmm.
Not so long ago, they actually 3D printed an entire jaw for a woman and.
Wow.
Ended up just completely replacing her jaw with a 3D printed jaw. I don't believe that one was titanium, best I can tell. But they're doing more interesting things too, like printing noses, blood vessels, skin, and livers.
I heard about the experimentation with creating intestines also out of 3D printed materials.
It's getting crazy.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
It's super cool. It's like it sort of makes the world where the replicator seem not quite so science fiction. It's like the very 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 earliest rudimentary version of it, but like it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, and to me, I go even like farther, like sci-fi blue sky with stuff like this, just because I mean you have things like teleporters. It's supposedly in the future, if we were to believe Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. At some point, would it just be easier to 3D print all of the stuff for the person and transfer their consciousness instead?
There has been a couple of science fiction stories about such an idea.
Okay.
At least a few. Yeah, that would be it. That would be quite the thing, too, because then when your consciousness is longer attached to one physical location, what does that mean?
Ooh, right. And I know
really?
That's like kind of a big theme in the Ghost in the Shell series, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Transcendence also kind of touched on that, too.
All right.
Not that I saw it, but that's kind of what the basic premise of the story is.
Okay.
So we go from cybernetic children possibly taking over the world to...
or vertebrally enhanced. Right.
To Japan wants to see robots compete against each other in the 2020 Summer Olympics.
Interesting. That'd so, be quite the extra
as
sport.
Like a halftime show? Or how is that... Okay.
South
the finger went up. As in,
up.
Wait, there's more.
We'll see. See, South Korea... has robot spectators at their baseball games.
What?
Japan wants to see James. Robot athletes competing against each other at the 2020 Olympics. Tokyo will host the 2020 Olympics, and if Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, apologize if I butchered that because I probably did, has any say in the matter, The world will see the world's robots come together to compete for robot supremacy. Quote, in 2020, I would like to gather all the world's robots and aim to hold an Olympics where they compete in technical skills, Abe told reporters while visiting a manufacturer of caregiving robots. The prime minister also shared his desire to see Japan's robot industry triple in size to 2.4 trillion yen, or about $24 billion. Abe said he would like to set up a console that would help make a, quote, robotic revolution a reality in order to aid Japan's growth. From the story, to be fair, this wouldn't be the first time a robot competition has taken place on a large stage. Back in 2010, China organized a humanoid battle involving 16 events. There are also a number of other large robot events, including the Robo World Cup, the Robo Games, and the DARPA Robotics Challenge. Last month, 60 teams of students from around the world assembled for the 13th Annual Marine Advanced Technology Education Remotely Operated Vehicle International Competition.
Whew, that's a catchy name.
Yeah, at Michigan's Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary to hold a competition for underwater robots.
Ooh.
So maybe by 2020, we'll have at least one event of robots all battling each other.
Okay. I'm going to do a follow-up story just because I think this fits nicely.
Very good.
If you were really interested in getting a job at the University of Illinois, Chicago, in the field of tripping seniors...
Wait, what?
It's a field. Well, unfortunately...
There's a field that trips seniors?
Well, that's a heck of a field. It's a burgeoning field of tripping seniors.
So... well. For the audience, tripping as in, like, they making fall them over? Fall. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was saying tripping or, no, like, drugs. Tripping.
No.
Okay. Okay. See. Just for the audience.
I'm not going to hold that against seniors if they want to partake in stuff like that. I mean, they've lived long enough. Maybe they earned it. I don't know. But anyway, if you wanted that job, it unfortunately has been taken over by the mechanical robotic type things. So...
what?
Yeah.
Now they're stealing our jobs and everything?
Exactly. Basically, they've rigged up this system that's a pretty tricky treadmill-like system that basically allows the senior citizen that they brought in, decked out in a motion capture suit so that they can properly document how seniors fall, and... also rigged up in some manner of suspension device so that they won't actually hurt themselves. I assume they put the motion capture stuff on in order to catch them at the last second so that they can observe the trajectory of their fall or something akin to that. But
or just seeing how they move in general probably gives them more information than, you know.
Maybe that's all there is to it. But anyway, the fact is... they made this treadmill system specifically to make seniors trip and, like, catch them off guard and make them fall. So
it's a little bit bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense when you come across numbers like this, that $30 billion are spent yearly to treat seniors for... they're falling. So it's a number and it's large. So,
and it's probably something that if they can find ways to reduce the amount of time spent treating them by having better services or better, you know, more accessible areas to begin with, that wouldn't be so bad.
Right. I think the key so far is to not line the walkways
with robots that will trip them.
With tripping robots.
That's a good first step, and I think we're well on our way to making that one true.
Right.
And we can take our only one.
We can take that job back from the robots.
You, young hooligan.
Want your job back? Why, yes, I do, sir. Here you go.
Wait, senior citizen, you need to put this mocap suit on.
You stick some ping pong balls to your body. Wait, what? No,
you get people to throw, like, Velcro-covered ping pong balls at them first. From multiple angles, so I mean...
quick! Caleb, save us.
Well, today is the day of uncovering mysteries. First, Hello Kitty. And now, there is a place in Death Valley known as the Racetrack. which has been a geological mystery for many years, because what it looks like is there are rocks that seem to move without any external force or a mysterious external forces that cause them to move across the...
A plane.
Yes, the playa, if you will. A playa.
Okay.
What they did, researchers went out and they tagged several of the larger rocks with GPS sensors.
Did they say you're it after they did it?
Because
that would have been funny in my mind, but you can move on.
They might have done that. They also rigged up several time-lapse cameras to a couple of weather stations nearby that watch the kind of, so they can watch the area.
Mm.
And
it seems like cheating.
They believe they have found the source of the rock's movement, and it is cool. It is literally cool.
Okay,
it is ice. In the winter, a super thin layer of, or a very thin layer of ice, something about the thickness of a window pane, develops across the surface of the riverbed, and then when it melts in summer, or when it melts in the daytime, wind and stuff moves the rocks, so they are still moving across the plain, but it's because of ice that lifts them just that little bit off the dirt so that they can slide.
That reminds me of when you did a story a while back about the pyramids. They would pour water in front and then...
Yeah, it's funny. I just saw that story pop up on another like major news outlet. Like, we just figured this out. I scooped you like months ago.
We talked about that on Robots Tech way long ago.
Come on, NBC.
Clearly you're not listening, NBC.
Yes.
Clearly, you're not listening to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound.
Ooh, nicely done.
Yeah.
NBC. I don't know if it was really NBC.
NBC, CBS, Fox, but CNN, know all of them.
Right. Yes.
Okay. So let's say you're a huge pinball fan, right?
Okay.
And you live in Oakland.
Okay.
Okay.
But you can't play pinball.
Why?
Because it's against the law. Or it was. That's right. California City repeals longstanding ban on playing pinball.
There was a ban on that?
That's right. Though the threat of prosecution had been practically non-existent, pinball had been outlawed in the city of Oakland for the past 80 years.
What?
That changed in July when the city amended the ordinance forbidding it.
Huh.
Oakland's strange ban on pinball wasn't so strange when it was enacted, reports the San Jose Mercury News.
Mm.
In the 1930s, pinball machines were more similar to slot machines than what is played today, and it was a form of gambling. Oakland's law was aimed at curbing gambling. In the 1940s, with the introduction of flippers, pinball became more a game of skill and less of chance, but the game was still technically verbatim in our town. The repeal of that ban came in a July 15th amendment to a city anti-gambling ordinance, which the city council took up to address a loophole that allowed internet cafes to offer online gambling activities while essentially disguising itself as offering internet access for business or communication purposes. In fixing that, the city got rid of the outdated prescription on pinball. To celebrate the repeal of pinball prohibition, Stern Pinball, the International Flipper Pinball Association, and a local Radio Shack are staging a month-long pinball contest. It began on Wednesday, and the winner takes home an Iron Man Pro Vault Edition pinball machine that they may play to their heart's content legally.
Nice.
Hey.
So there you go, Oakland. Pour your drink of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Put some shrimp on the Barbie or something.
On the Bobby.
Have some ice cream at
Mickey Water.
The Fenton's or someplace. And Fenton's. Celebrate your pinball now, legally.
Yay.
You can come out of the closets and the basements and wherever else you were hiding your pinballs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can flip your flippers legally now.
Right.
All right. Very cool.
Pinball speakeasies.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out how to extend the prohibition thing. Mm. So, yeah. Well, as far as the shrimp on the Barbie comment, I sort of have something kind of loosely related to that, because in Australia, they
totally planned that
are testing out Google's new, perhaps someday, fleet of drones.
Quick, get Johnny Drone Killer.
Well, these are friendly drones. But
for now.
Right. The unique thing about them is that instead of using a sort of the quadcopter design that everybody's using, so it's so passe, it's so so overdone, this is...
They're all an octocopter.
This is
copters now.
Right.
Cool,
this
kids.
Is back to like old school. This is like an airplane.
Nice.
The twist is that it's like a flying wing, so it's sort of like a smaller version of the thing from the first Captain America movie where he ends up crashing and getting buried in ice and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Better version in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. That's true. Well, I mean, better is...
A relative term. More believable?
Although I do believe it was fake and made specifically for that movie. But anyway, we're getting away from the
more
flying,
believable.
The flying wing... that Google is making.
It's a wing.
It's also pretty nifty because they figured out how to make it VTOL, I believe is the word for it.
Huh.
So I can't tell exactly how it works because I don't have close enough video of it doing it, but it can like slow down, loiter, and it ends up like hanging down. Mm-hmm. Like it makes it so the wing is pointed straight up,
right,
and it'll just hang there like it's a helicopter instead.
Huh.
It'll use the little propellers as helicopter thingies, rotors.
Yes. That's pretty crazy.
I'm highly technical.
Very.
Well, anyway, the what it does from there is pretty neat, too. It poops a box.
So it's
attached to, like, a fishing line, but still, I mean...
And the purpose of the box is?
Well... I'm glad you asked, because according to Google, what they're really developing it for is for emergency situations where people need to have specialized supplies shipped to far-off locations. I think this is kind of playing into why it was being done in Australia, because there's a lot of those instances over there.
There's a lot of open space in Australia.
Right, where you might need specialized supplies and short notice and need a Google flying wing to come out to you.
Because Amazon hasn't gotten their drones into Australia yet.
Right. Well, anyway, and obviously... They also admit at the end that, oh, yeah, and this also might be handy for us to deliver things around if we needed to that aren't, like, for anything other than profit.
Right.
But that still, the main part of the story is that it can drop life-saving equipment by way of fishing line or a fishing line-like substance from hanging in air and then fly off again. On its merry way.
Do they happen to say, like, how much it can carry?
It can carry up to 22 pounds.
That's pretty impressive.
That's not bad.
Because most of the multi-rotor drones are not quite that... They can't quite carry that much.
Okay. Yeah, I don't... It's hard to tell from this also. I don't see a thing that shows a good comparison of size. But it is funny because it shows it... It like hovering over a farm basically and dropping a box, and it's like slowly lowering it down like it's a, I don't know, like a spider hanging from a web or something like that.
Mm.
But because it's just in the middle of no place, it's just like dropping a box on the ground and then just flying away. So I'm totally imagining it like trying to deliver something. And it says, oh, by the way, your package was delivered by Google. And people are like looking around, oh, where did they deliver it? It's, well, we gave it to your field. You should just head out there and find it in your quite large field.
Person walks out their door.
Right. Yeah. It's funnier because it's like a farm in Australia. So it's vast. But anyway,
for a minute of space.
Some cow just walks right by it.
Yeah.
But it's endlessly hilarious to me and just watch this thing just go bloop, a box, like, mm-hmm. onto the ground.
Kangaroos are all staring at it.
100 feet below.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I wonder if they would also potentially use this for, like, spreading internet around, like, big events and stuff like that.
They don't specifically say that I saw in the story.
Mm.
Mm.
But again, it is said that because it is the crew in Australia, their priorities might be slightly different than America-zoned Google. So.
Ah, good point, good point.
Very we'll cool. keep you updated.
Right. Yes.
Or Jason will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The drones.
Maybe if I don't. Or just get bored with it.
The yeah. drones.
For now, yeah, totally. I'm on top of it. I have your up-to-the-minute Australian Google News.
Google like no one else.
Google.au. Right.
Robot Stack, Ant-Man News, and Australian Google News.
Right.
Come here first.
It's a good. It's a niche. It's not a bad niche.
Yeah. Speaking of Marvel News, not Ant-Man, but... Netflix head says Daredevil and the Defenders can be darker than Marvel movies.
Ooh.
The Marvel / Netflix model is based on the Avengers.
No.
Netflix CEO Ted Sarando says that the decision to launch Daredevil, followed by Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Iron Fist, and eventually blend the characters into the Defenders was, as one would suspect, entirely inspired by the success of Marvel Cinematic Universe. Quote, it was really based on the theatrical model of the Avengers, Sarando said in a recent interview with Empire Magazine, not Latino Review again.
Ooh.
You're slipping, Latino Review. You're slipping.
Thank you, Empire.
Could you take another group of characters, the Defenders, and go about it the same way? Normally, they do the big movie, and then eventually they get to the group origin story. Having 13 hours to tell each of these stories, you can go right to the origin story and the action at the same time. As to the timeline for the various series beyond the currently filming Daredevil, the CCO said that currently the writers' rooms are open and they're looking at casting Jessica, adding, if you sense some hesitation in my voice, that's classic Marvel fashion. They like to keep that veil of secrecy, but Daredevil is already shooting since that's out first. Eventually, the series will run very close together. You can then have a separate season where the characters will cross over. Given the cohesive nature of Marvel's film and TV divisions, with events and the films playing into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., fans are, of course, wondering if they might see some crossover between the movies and the Netflix series. Sarando confirmed that the idea has, quote, definitely been discussed.
Mm-hmm.
As far as...
But never going to happen.
As far as the tone for the various shows is concerned, the Netflix head assured that they will not be backing away from the gritty nature of these characters, setting, and stories. Quote, the series will not be afraid to go darker than the film did. Sarando shared, what we love about this particular set of heroes is that they're a little more down-to-earth, costume-wise, and also in that these are gritty crime stories, more in the streets than in the clouds.
It's true.
Wait, Daredevil wears a down-to-earth costume?
Relatively speaking, it's not like, you know, spandex and, you know, big white star on the chest.
You got me on the big white star on the chest, but last time I checked, it was spandex.
No, it's usually been leather.
Oh.
Leather.
But not
still
leather.
Quite snug, though.
Not saying it's not snug.
Red leather.
Okay.
Leather armor. It's one of the first items you buy when you start a new D&D adventure.
That is true.
I do not play
that
these games.
Right. I usually try and save up for some chainmail, but that's just me.
Yeah, you're also usually playing clerics, where the extra weight does not affect their abilities to do stuff. So
man. Always. Trying to discuss my clerical tendencies. Okay. Poetic Codings. A group exhibition that explores new relationships between art and technology will be on view at the San Jose Institute of Contemporary Art from May 31st through September 6th, 2014. Many contemporary exhibitions have presented code-based works. However, Poetic Codings is one of the first to juxtapose wall-based works with those made from mobile devices. For more information on this exhibition, visit www.sjica.org.
Very cool. I'm going to bring up our final story of the news segment today.
You do that.
And I mentioned Hitchbot not so very long ago, which is a robot.
Is this the trash can?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a robot constructed out of household materials.
Trash can.
and is completely dependent upon human interaction to get it across Canada.
That was the
goal. July 27th, it completed its quest to get from one coast of Canada to the other coast.
This was Canada?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Canada. I may have pronounced it wrong the first time.
Okay.
Canada's Atlantic Park City, Halifax, was where its final destination was, and they have posted the pictures of its adventures and blogged about its story as well. And it's just kind of cool that like the experiment actually succeeded, for one thing, like a human interaction driven robot. The only way the robot gets across the country is by people picking it, putting it in their car, and driving it to the next area.
That kind of breaks my mind a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering there's a lot of people that aren't that nice. But that's why I mentioned that's why I specified the Canada thing, because I mm-hmm. think people are a little bit nicer to robots up there, or in general, one of the two.
There is that assertion to be made.
Did the robot say anything?
The robot does talk to them. It keeps track of its location with GPS, and it can actually give out interesting information about the area by looking up stuff on the internet and talking to the people.
Is it equipped with tasing devices or anything to protect itself, or no?
Not that I'm aware of.
Wow, like, impressive.
Yeah. So good on you, Canada, and good on your robotics. And also, you know, human-robot interactions, you know. It's not just C-3PO who deals in human-cyborg reactions. It's us now today. Human-cyborg relations, yes. So it's just kind of cool to wrap up with a little robot story. It's nice to see that there was actually, you know, information about the completion of said event as well.
No robots were harmed in the making of the story.
No, they were not. They were, in fact, aided by our organic brethren.
They were pleasantly escorted from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right, that's going to do it for the news. If you missed any of our stories or want to go check out any of the pictures or videos that usually accompany the stories that we do, since this is radio, it's hard to look at those while you're listening, especially when you're driving. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to do that at all.
So, Caleb, how can they do that?
Well, if you want to find our stories, find our pictures and whatevers, you go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow. You can like that page, and you can it has all the links there that we try to put them up as soon as we talk about them. They also show up on Twitter, which is twitter.com/robotsattackme. It's all one word. And then when we post the archive version of our show from this evening, it will go onto robotsattack.me, where you can find the links to the show stories and the audio too, in case you want to share that with your friends.
That's right. All right. Speaking of audio, let's play some music and then we'll come back with some geek talk. All right. We'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KACU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound.
Believe it.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KACU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. We're now on Geek Talk. This is where we shoot the talk. I didn't say the other thing.
Shoot the breeze.
Sure.
Yeah.
Laser guns. Take that breeze.
Right.
So I think
Breeze just looks at us awkwardly. Like,
why are you shooting?
Right. You do realize that does nothing to me.
Your lasers, they do nothing.
They do nothing. So, Jason's been playing Diablo 3.
That's right.
I hope to be playing it very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both the awesome thing about what Blizzard has done and the discouraging thing for me is that I've played quite a bit, I feel like, but I have yet to pass the point that I was at in the demo.
In the demo. Mm-hmm.
But that's also like a praise to them that they made a sizable demo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a lot of it is just also that I think the barbarian, which I went through the first time around, was a little bit more robust than my monk character. And so the monk seems to require a little bit more...
stratagem?
Yeah, because it seems to be more about dodging and trying to do, like, treat itself like a ranged weapon, which I think it's a neat idea, but it takes a little bit of time to get your head around.
Yeah.
Or at least mine. I'm quite slow when it comes to learning monk maneuvers.
I like the, since I haven't had a chance to try it myself, but I've heard a couple neat, like, social features that have been added to it. Like, when you find legendary items, you'll be able to randomly give, like, I don't know if it's random or if you can select, like, people on your friends list to give, like, a random, like, legendary item to them.
Oh, neat.
And then another thing that sounded really cool was if your friend was killed by, like, some kind of, you know, one of the bigger creatures, I'm guessing, or something like that.
Right.
When you play and you come across, like, one of those creatures or I don't know if it's like a specific, like just like the main bosses or if it's like mini bosses or something like that. But if you come across that same type of creature, it plays, basically it becomes a nemesis. It plays like this particular music and it'll like, I think it shows like that this creature was killed your friend. And so like if you kill it, you'll get some extra stuff, and I think maybe your friend will get, but like if that's it kills nice. You, then it like it'll travel through like your friend's games or something
on
the list. So it just sounded like they put a lot of thought into like making this a, even in a single player experience or a co-op experience, like just getting all your friends to kind of experience it together.
Yeah. And I can imagine, I mean, it's nowhere near the same sort of thing, but I can imagine people looking at the Dark Souls game and seeing the sort of like ghost stuff from that and thinking, okay, this is a neat idea.
Yeah,
we can
how
do
can
some
we
really interesting stuff with this.
Put our little twist on it, but
I haven't tried that feature out myself, but that sounds like a fantastic way to like breathe some life into, you know, what's not a super current game, so to speak. Yeah, I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
Get everybody involved. Really entices your friends to play too, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounded neat when I heard some people talking about that. I was like, "Oh, that's cool." It sort of the little nemesis thing sort of reminded me of the new Shadows of Mordor game that's coming out, that's like a big thing about like not with your friends, but like these orc leaders, like,
right,
you know, them killing you or you killing them, like how they become nemesis and it, like, you know, it alters the game and all that sort of stuff. So
makes them more important to your character.
Yeah. I like those little twists. It'll be neat to see how that kind of aspect transfers into other games. But
definitely.
So yeah, hopefully I'll get a chance to play that myself.
Right.
But something I did experience that now, if it's anything like having to wait for book 3, now waiting for book 4 of Legend of Korra, it's going to be a while. And man, That was a really good book, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but the ending of book 3, wow. It's
pretty mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I rushed through the entire series in like 2 nights, and yeah, there's a reason for that. It's well made.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they have them all up on nick.com. Now, I know
they definitely have book 3 on there. Don't know about the rest of them.
Yeah, I know when I was, because they don't show it on TV anymore. It's just online.
Which you can access through your 360 without having it be linked to a cable system, which I was nervous about at first. So.
Yeah, I wonder if since it's not on TV anymore.
I didn't know if that was part of it or not, or if it's just that the cable companies are kind of slacking off on that sort of stuff now.
Yeah, but I highly recommend checking out. There's some... definitely some very cool moments and some surprises and some man.
Yeah,
comes highly recommended.
Well, the last few episodes are so well animated too. It's really kind of mind shattering. Like the first Avatar series had some really cool moments as far as that. And they actually kind of play up some of the old moments that they had as well. They just sort of reliving the same things with new characters, so they put their own twists on them, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
And brutal, too, in some cases. Really good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, when it hits a certain point in the season or book, however you want to look at it.
Right.
Then it's like, oh, okay. Like, you can see that they were sort of saving a lot of the, like, best kind of animation for
this part.
For a lot of the fights and certain stuff. And you're like, oh, damn. Oh, man. Oh, well. Did you have a favorite character from this book?
I need to think about it a little bit more. The bad guys are really awesome.
Yeah.
And so I'd be tempted to name one of them as a favorite character. Because, yeah, there's one thing that they definitely play up in this one that they didn't do as much in the previous series or the previous books of the series was, now that they've made all of these different groups with these powers, they didn't have too many people that specialized in a certain type of technique with those abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically all of what these new bad guy characters are.
Yeah.
And so it allowed them to concentrate on making, like, really nifty new directions that are all linked, like, very well.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Lotus. It's not really small or anything, but that's...
Yeah, yeah. The Rise of the Red Lotus.
Yep. But yeah, there's some... It was good, but I still... Yeah, I know when I was trying to think of two, like, oh man, who's been kind of my favorite character, but I definitely, I don't know, I think I got to give it up for Bolin.
Yeah, he's probably my favorite right now.
And Pabu, I love the when they interact together.
Yeah,
man, they got some good moments in this.
Yeah, it's funny because the previous books, it was sort of disappointing because I knew they were trying to set up Bolin as like the new like comic relief, he was funny, but it never seemed to like quite hit just right. But this one, they definitely did it a lot better, it seemed like, because things get really serious, and so him trying to lighten the mood, just being good. Awkwardly like, yeah, it works pretty well.
It works
because you know that person, you've met that person.
Yeah,
that, like, they see two friends fighting and they make like a fart joke or something like that.
Right.
Not that he does that.
Does that, but yeah.
But it's yeah. Just...
It's that like, oh, okay, that's a new direction, everybody.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So
very cool.
You recommend those?
Much better than the previous two books, in my view.
Hmm. Well, speaking of things that are also good and highly recommended, we recommend that you listen to the KSCU stream so you can listen to us even when you are not near a radio. You can stream us anytime you like on KSCU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website. And then you will never be without the underground sound as long as you have internet.
That's true.
And remember, search for the streaming on any of the services, KSCU is your key to finding us quicker. 103.3 will get you interesting results, but not necessarily directly to our station.
That's true.
So there you go.
All right. We're going to take another music break, and then we're going to come back with the core. And Caleb has our topic for tonight. You want to kind of tease the folks just briefly what it is? Because they'll definitely want to stick around for this one. I think it's going to be interesting.
Yes. I've commonly brought up feminism in games and gaming culture, and not this week. It got really interesting yet again.
All right. So we'll be back with some more Robots Attack right after this.
You are now entering the core.
That's right. We're in the core here on Robots Attack on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound, and Caleb has brought our topic we're going to discuss tonight.
That's right. If you are not familiar, I'm just going to give you a quick background. A very nice lady by the name of Anita Sarkeesian has started a series of about analyzing the portrayal of women in media culture, specifically like television and movies was where it started. She moved on to the ever-growing cadre or collection of video games and how those narratives have also interpreted the way men and women interact and how the nature of that relationship works. And it has both of these series have garnered her a fair amount of ill will amongst certain percentages of the population, and it reached a
point. Jerkbags.
Yes. And other phrases that you can attach to that we can't say on the radio.
I'm not sure I should have said that one, to be honest, but I don't know.
That one I think works. That one. But anyway, her latest episode of Tropes versus Women in Video Games came out on the 26th. And it actually, she's kind of well known in the gaming community. For better or for worse, but this latest video got a little bit more steam because it actually reached beyond her usual core audience and was actually picked up by Joss Whedon and Tim Schafer, who then retweeted to their fans, "This is something we all need to be looking at." Now, it's healthy to debate whether we all agree with Anita's perspectives or not, and it should be debated whether we agree, and if we don't, why, and if we do, why. So
do you think, kind of first question, do you think the fact that she got more threats and complaints was due to her topic for this week, or due to the fact that it reached more people, or both?
I think a bit of both. I think because her topic was able to touch points with other people, other big names in media that deal with, you know, trying to understand relationships and gamings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then they spread that to their fans. Like it was that whole like compounding, you know, the classic pyramid scheme thing. Like that's sort of where it goes.
Because each one is like sort of a different, like it looks at a different aspect, right?
Yes.
So do you think, like my question, so also what she was focusing on this time, do you think also was a part of it too?
Because this one was particularly the title of it is Women as Background Decoration Part 2, so it's like it's a follow-up to like the idea that the female character is not an actual part of the game. They're not an actual piece of the story, other than they are the decorative thing that is put into place to be a plot device which moves you on to the next thing.
Yeah, and Joss Whedon was specifically talking about it as an idea of violence against women, and that's what he was commenting about, used as window dressing, quote unquote. And so,
yeah. So that's it's just and,
so like just so mm-hmm. for the audience and just to kind of clear. So like if you had a female character, something like really nasty or something happened to her.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like sort of what pushes the story forward or something.
Pushes it forward, or it happens almost in like,
does she give some examples? I haven't watched it.
The video is a half an hour long. I haven't actually finished all of it myself just yet, but it's,
the biggest one is she shows some video from Assassin's Creed. I forget which one.
I can't remember now off the top of my head either. It's probably one of the newer ones since they're actually more interaction with characters at that point.
Yeah, it looked like it probably was just because it it seemed to be sort of piratey themed from what I saw.
So that's going to be either 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Black Flag. But yeah, they're trying to unpack this idea of that the violence against women is a plot device. It is a heavily leaned on plot device, and
it's a sloppy shortcut is the way that she kind of framed it.
Mm-hmm. It's like we need to give emotional impact. Well, let's kill her or let's do something violent to her. And you can't, there are games and stories where like it's happened to guys, but like the thing of it is like it's this creates this weird like imbalance of violence against characters and the response to said violence, which is generally more violence. So it's like it's kind of like perpetuating these weird situations where everything just goes further and further down the hole.
Well, best I could tell, the argument against it was that sure, it happens to both sides of the equation, but in all of these games, it's the male character who has the agency in the game.
Yes.
And so by having that, the female character that ends up receiving whatever horribleness that the game developer decides to dish onto them, they never had a chance to do anything about it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the main thing that it seemed like there was a problem with, best I understood.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's something that she's brought up in a lot of our other videos, is that one of the fundamental flaws of the way the games have approached this is that the female characters are just there. They're rarely main characters, are rarely the acting character. It's almost always something done to them, something around them. It's like they have no control over anything that themselves. And it creates a culture of it invites a culture of dismissal of another person as a person, because you know they're seen until there is a character that has such agency, and other people have brought up examples of Buffy as the Vampire Slayer as one of the people that has agency over her own destiny, over her own life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, she's also the title character, but that's kind of the point, is that, you know, she guides her own thing. Stuff still happens. Plenty of terrible things happen in the life of Buffy Summers, but
yeah,
she still has something that she can do about it, either to prevent it or to cope with it. Like, you know, there's... It's just the main thing is that she has control over where she goes and what she does. There's not like a bunch of shadowy guys like trying to like cage her in, or if they are, she does something about that. You know,
Well, I don't think it's quite as much about that as like having a female in the position of being the main character, especially in a video game where you are using that character to solve problems. That ends up being... It creates a natural balance for this sort of situation in a weird sort of way. Like, if you have a male character and you're playing with that male character and a female character gets taken, you're the hero that comes in, swoops in, save the day.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that it takes away from a woman's ability to feel like they ever had any of the power to begin with. And it's something that I have a really hard time with, to be honest, because a lot of this comes down to either somebody's choice on how they write a story, or video game industry having to fill a video game with who knows how many hours worth of stuff, and them not having like AAA class writers to make however many hours worth of stuff that they're going to put into a video game. So you're going to have spots in video games where it's weaker or where it wasn't as well thought out. and where somebody wasn't thinking about the feminist perspective. And it's going to happen in every single video game, like almost every single time, if somebody has a sharp eye out for it. And so that's kind of my problem with it, with her perspective on this. It's not that I think it's invalid. It's just, it's really difficult to do that perfectly. So,
yeah, and that's why I say it's important to that this be a discussion. But before we jump more into discussion, it looks like you have something to...
Yes, speaking of problems that you can actually solve without any trouble, well... Unless you're allergic to animals, then it's probably a trouble. But maybe you know someone who isn't allergic to animals and they can help solve the problem. If you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook.
And it, kind of where I wanted to go with this also is it feels more difficult for me also because I feel like I've been immersed in stuff where all of the female characters had agency in practically everything that I've watched. And I don't know if that's like just purely my choices or what, but I'm sure there's been spots in video games and so on where stuff like this is... less than perfect, but by and large, I mean, the entire Firefly series, again, it's like Joss Whedon created, but I've watched that who knows how many times, and every single one of those characters has agency, all of the female characters, and I mean, that's what I consider good fiction right there, and so it's difficult for me, like... Because I can't relate to any of the stuff that is really cruddy that she points out.
Can you remember any of the examples that she gives? Or just so like myself and the audience can maybe...
Let me see if I can pull up one or two real quick. I can't... Off the top of my head, I am unfortunately not coming up with any. I mean, like, the... In other episodes, it's been like... in Star Fox Adventure, they... the character... The Star Fox becomes is they made Star Fox the hero of the game, but originally it was a game that was where Crystal, the other female lead of that game, is supposed to be the hero.
This is from the first episode.
That's from one of the early ones. Yeah. There was us. I can't remember the name of the game now. But like Dante's Inferno got listed in there pretty quick because the opening part of that is I thought fairly tasteless myself, and the there was another it was a lesser known FPS game that was a bioengineering basis one, and like. The character's girlfriend like gets morphed into one of the creatures, and so like the only way to progress in the game is to eliminate her character.
Oh, okay.
Personally, I think the
she makes a really solid case that, especially in the first episode that I saw, that female characters are marginalized over and over again and in places that you wouldn't necessarily expect it to because we have such fond memories of them because she walks through practically every Nintendo game ever made and points out like, okay, well, yeah, here you go this and here you go that. And yeah, the female characters generally are completely helpless in 9 out of 10 of the situations. So,
yeah, I'm trying to think of any examples that you would know so you can,
I don't remember the ones from this specific one. I just know the Assassin's Creed one because it was the main picture that was used for the articles that were spreading around.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. I'm just trying to give like for like myself and for the audience out there who isn't familiar, just some ideas so they can be like, oh, okay, this is what she's trying to, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on the like the still frame for the video for this week, it has one of the posters from Hitman Absolution, and it's a girl in lingerie with a pool of blood behind her, and it says beautifully executed.
Oh, okay.
Things of it's this sort of attitude towards like depicting violence as and women as objects of destruction or as beings of violence is sort of like this weird meshing that happens in, especially in gaming, more than other places, because violence is sort of a lot of the base gameplay of most games.
Okay. Does she offer like, I mean, as far as we've sort of thrown out, like, okay, it sounds like so we need to have more like female main characters of games and that sort of like, does she sort of offer like ways of like, okay, this is how we can kind of combat it? Or
yeah, some of the other ones, like, she kind of likes like, this is what it looks like, and you know, if we thought through what these characters' motivations were, what they're about, things like that, that would be better fleshed out characters, or just give this character, instead of having the hero character, the hero male character, do this for them, why not have that character do that for themselves? Or maybe you jump into that character and then help them do it. I mean, I think you're about to... Go ahead.
It's the argument window dressing is the most literal sense of the term. Mm. Like, they have no purpose there except as a background for the male character to have some sort of emotional thing for him, and they don't really flesh them out at all. Mm-hmm. It's a trigger for the male character to have some big thing happen. That seems to be the main problem.
Yeah. Because at that point, like, what purpose does it serve to have these characters at all? It's like, yeah, there are games that are thin on plot, but, you know, being thin on plot's shouldn't be an excuse for being, like, for being sloppy about your plots. Like, maybe find a better story to tell, or find a better way to tell your story before you... I mean, obviously, like, if you keep, you can be tweaking things until you never release, and you have to release something.
Yeah.
But it's like, maybe just, so like a lot of her stuff, like, you know, trying, like, tries getting us to think about these ideas and what has gone before, and see if the future can be guided differently.
Not always having, like, exploitive stuff just for exploitive sake kind
yes.
of thing. Like,
yeah, because I think, like, there have been a number of modern games, or very, very contemporary games, that have not necessarily solved this, but they have done a better job of creating characters that are likable, that are strong, and that are interesting beyond, you know, the typical, you know, 30 to 40 year old dark hair, brown haired male. You know, it's like, you know, you brought up Clementine from the Walking Dead games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's become like something of a favorite amongst players. You know, Femme Shep's an obvious choice. That was another one that you guys brought up like last time we talked about this. Oh, that was really good. But my brain just dumped it, unfortunately. Sorry.
That's fine. Yeah, I think I know we've mentioned like Faith and Samus and Lara Croft, obviously.
For The Last of Us, like, a lot of people really liked the girl from that game as, like,
Ellie.
Yeah, because, like, I haven't played The Last of Us myself, but I've heard lots of good things about it, and from what I understand, like, as the game progresses, like, Ellie becomes she becomes a stronger person as a result of the actions of the game and the things that she does herself. So it's kind of a interesting.
She's a good character.
Mm-hmm. So these are examples of it doing well, and I think it's also a hopeful pointer towards the future of that this sort of situation won't be like de facto or as common. It'll be more uncommon to see the other side, I think, hopefully. Mm-hmm. You know, that they'll, or at least there'll be a balance of like, this is the stuff that people do because they can't think of anything better, but when they do, it's like this.
It in a weird way, it sort of reminds me of back in like film school, the early classes we had where like either you had to tell a story with slides because we used like cameras first before like film cameras.
Still cameras before moving cameras, motion picture cameras.
So, you know, like, okay, tell a quick story from those. And it was amazing how many stories were like someone overdosed on pills or someone did like it was like death or something. Like it was just all these really like just
horrific things.
Yeah. And you don't like, I didn't really think about it until you were confronted with all these same things like over and over and over again. I was like, geez, is this like the only thing anybody's doing in these? It's like, I mean, you know, so it was, you know, it was alcohol or like I drank too much alcohol and did something bad happened or I overdosed on pills or suicide. It was all like, it got to a point. I remember one of my teachers was just like, geez, like, I don't know if I can take this anymore. It's like every year, this is all I see usually from beginning, you know, students and stuff. So, and I think kind of going back to what we talked about last week, it's unfortunate. Like it's definitely a horrible thing that she's received. I don't know if we mentioned it or not, but the,
She
like
received
death threats and all the negative stuff to it. But it's like, it almost, like we mentioned before, it sometimes you have to be confronted by stuff like you don't want to see before it can get better type of thing. So like, it kind of, it sucks that she has to take all of this and she shouldn't have to, but hopefully something positive will come out of it where like this will open up, you know, people's eyes who maybe weren't paying attention to it before.
Yeah.
You know, or like seeing like, whoa, she's getting all these crests. What's going on? And then look at what she's doing and being like, whoa, wait a minute. This is, is something that should be addressed.
Yeah. And the thing that I kept seeing over and over again from the sort of hateful side of the equation was that, well, it doesn't matter all of the times that horrible things happen to guys in the exact same way, because they use men as window dressing in the exact same way, like, really often. It's not like that's uncommon. And, I mean, I can think of a bunch of plots where they didn't even bother to show the image of it. It's just a part of a story. And that's where it ends up getting really confusing for guys, because we've never had the perspective that a girl has, because we've never had to think about, like, well, I'm not really well represented here type of thing.
Right.
Because it's always been a male character. And so it's difficult for us to think backwards on that sort of thing. And that's where the anger seems to be coming from, is that this happens to guys all the time. And it's like, well, yeah, but they're also put in the place, especially in video games, of the character who fixes everything. And so Being able to work backwards is the important part.
And the other thing, like, that makes like the female perspective a little bit something of a challenge as well, is that they have, it is throughout history, it's been something of a struggle for their own agency, just even in society. So it's like society and art are both in some ways like kind of stacking the deck against, like, the being able to speak for oneself. And so when, and because that's, a lot of that's gone on so long, like you've been saying, like, it's quote unquote always been this way, but now it's like someone's like trying to turn the light, or, you know, turn the mirror around. Like, it doesn't always look like this, and it's not always like this for all of us. And so it's like, it does definitely make things sort of kind of weird, because you're looking at this world from a completely different way.
Yeah.
And like I said before, it's like, it's less important that we agree with everything she says as much as we need to think about the things that are being said, and then decide whether, why or why not, or how much or how little we agree. And then, you know, behave accordingly as we go forward. You know, it's like, but, you know, when you know what that is, you know what you're standing on, then you have something to either change or to, you know, push forward from. Mm-hmm. But if you're standing in the middle, if you're not standing on anything, you can't do anything with that.
Yeah.
And to me, it seems like the missing link here is everybody has felt some place in their life where they felt like they were out of place or not taken seriously or disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, trying to find common things like that is an important first step or an important last line of defense for things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't get through to people that are just completely hateful, like all of the people that have been popping up on message board after message board about this topic,
mm-hmm.
until you say, well, wait, just stop for a second and think about the time that something really bad happened to you and think about how that made you feel,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. try and relate just a second. But that generally doesn't happen. It usually ends up turning into fighting fire with fire. And it just ends up going crazy instead of anything actually being fixed in those locations.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really important to make stuff like this, but I think it's even more important to figure out how to put it in a way that can get through to people who wouldn't understand whatsoever otherwise. 'Cause mm-hmm. right now, it seems like the big problem with her videos is that she doesn't know how to get through to a guy at all.
She's speaking from a highly adversarial standpoint. I'll put it that way. Like, she's mm-hmm. not against or not adversarial, antagonistic. She's trying to provoke response,
right?
And because she's being antagonistic, it is antagonizing people. It is drawing out.
She's not actually being mean or anything like that.
No.
It's just that she literally has no idea how to communicate with these creeps out there.
Yeah. And not that
everybody naturally knows how to talk to somebody who is mentally unhinged, but
yeah, that's why
it would be a useful ability when you are making videos like this. Yeah.
And that's why I say, you know, it might be someone else that actually, like, helps institute the change, yeah. but she's sort of the fly in the ointment that makes someone go, well, we need to figure out how to do this. And then maybe whoever comes after her will be able to
bring about
the change that she has been trying, that she's championing.
Yeah.
Well, and the problem too is it's once stuff like that starts to happen, it's easy to take for granted. And like, it's part of the reason why I mentioned the Firefly thing. It's like, I take it for granted because I've watched so much of this stuff where the women are really strong characters. And heck, pick mm-hmm. any Doctor Who episode for the last who knows how many years. The companion is not like the useless sidekick anymore. It's the person that pulls the doctor out of the fire about half the time
mm-hmm.
when yeah. he ends up not realizing that he's not quite smart enough to get out of a situation. Having somebody just there for him a lot of the time ends up being what gets him out of a situation. So,
mm-hmm.
nope.
Not to mention all of their random actual abilities and
mm-hmm.
and yeah, usefulness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like we've all mentioned. It's definitely good that someone is bringing this up,
yeah.
shining a light on it. Now it's up to the rest of us to look at that message mm-hmm. and start to question what we agree, what we disagree, and how we can address it.
Yes.
And that's just, like, that's the important, like, next step is just take a moment, like, you know, understand what she's trying to address.
Right.
And mm-hmm. then, you know, kind of go from there and not just, like, whatever like,
yeah.
kind of thing.
Right. They're trying to ruin my video game.
Yeah. yeah. So.
It's like, yeah.
So, but yeah, good topic. If you want to chime in on it, we definitely would love to hear from you. We'll have
mm-hmm.
links to the video and the story on our Facebook and Twitter and everything like that. And Caleb, yes. how can they participate? And
that's right. If you want to find us and comment on this, you can go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or do a search, Robots Attack, two words. You can also find us on Twitter. We are Robots Attack Me, all one word. And our email address is robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And robotsattackme is the place where you can find all the links, all the archive episodes, and all of the awesome that is Robots Attack.
That's right. Don't think it's too late. Like, oh, no, the show's over. I can't, you know, I wanted to chime in and say some stuff. Like, yeah. Even
we
tomorrow,
hear
the next
you.
Day,
yeah.
Yeah. You can, yeah, even email us, like, show topics or anything you want to discuss or anything like that. So, all right, that's going to do it for this week. Have a awesome Labor Day weekend. Do some fun stuff or do some fun stuff for someone who isn't expecting it. All right, on behalf of myself, Caleb, and Jason, we're out of here. Take it easy. We'll have more Robots Attack next Thursday here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
Raccoon, Veronica, Mistel.